Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again and welcome. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. On today's program, we are talking U.S. politics. There are many people who want to be president of the United States, but of course, not everyone can be. That is why there is a long process through which political parties choose candidates for the nation's highest office. The process can easily begin as early as 2.5 years before the presidential election. The leading parties hold primary elections and caucuses to help reduce the number of candidates. Then the party's nominee is officially named at a national convention or meeting. The next U.S. presidential election is still more than 2 years away, but some of the possible candidates are starting to organize their campaigns. Today, Milagros Ardin looks at the race for the presidential nomination in the Republican Party.
For the first time in many years, there appears to be no clear leader for the Republican nomination. At this early date, there are some individuals who are at least considering a run for the White House. Among them is Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. He recently won a test vote at a meeting of conservative activists. The senator is a strong critic of President Barack Obama.
We will challenge you in the courts. We will battle you at the ballot box. Mr. President, we will not let you shred our Constitution.
Senator Paul is likely to have plenty of competitors. One of them is another senator, Ted Cruz of Texas.
People are hurting tragically, and we need to turn this country around. We did it in 1980 with a grassroots movement that became the Reagan Revolution, and let me tell you, the same thing is happening all over today.
Senators Cruz and Paul are popular with Tea Party activists. The Tea Party has been a force within the Republican Party ever since it helped Republicans win control of the House of Representatives in 2010. Former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin has urged Republican leaders not to forget the importance of the Tea Party.
You know that 2010 election victory that swept you into power? You didn't build that. The Tea Party did.
Carol Doherty is with the Pew Research Center in Washington, D.C. He says the split within the Republican Party will play out during the U.S. congressional elections later this year.
The Republican Party's going through a lot of turmoil, a little bit of division. They're struggling to find their way a bit, as parties out of power are often in this position. Democrats have been in this position in the past.
Some Republicans say there is nothing to fear from all the divisive talk. Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan was the party's vice presidential candidate in 2012.
It's Tea Party versus establishment, libertarians versus social conservatives. There's infighting, conflict, backbiting, discord. Look, I'm Irish. That's my idea of a family reunion.
Paul Ryan is also seen as a possible candidate for the presidency in 2016. Another is New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
We don't get to govern if we don't win. And it's not only bad when we don't get to govern because we don't get to mold and change our society. What's worse is they do. And they're doing it to us right now.
But Carol Doherty of the Pew Research Center says for the first time in years, there is no clear Republican front runner.
I really think it's going to be interesting. There's no heir to the throne, as it were, as there often is in Republican races. It's a wide open race.
It is a different story for the Democratic Party. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton remains a strong favorite in 2016 if she decides to run. I'm Milagros Ardin.
We would like your opinion. Send us a letter or an email and tell us who you think will be the next leader of the United States after President Barack Obama's term ends. Now, we turn to something a little more personal. The World Health Organization says human rights must be respected and protected when women seek birth control services. The WHO recently produced new guidance on the subject for policymakers and healthcare providers. The guidelines were released earlier this month in connection with International Women's Day. Bob Doty has more.
The WHO estimates that more than 220 million women are not able to meet their needs for birth control. It says the most threatened are poor women, those living with HIV, and women displaced by armed conflict or other causes. Marlene Temmerman directs the WHO's Department of Reproductive Health and Research. She praises the fact that the words human rights are included in the name of the WHO guidance statement.
It's the first time that there is a guidance from WHO where human rights is actually in the title, and not only in the title, but also in the content of the guidelines. We have guidelines for contraceptive use. From the medical perspective, looking at what is safe, what are the medical eligibility criteria, what is contraindications, and so on. But now we have worked towards ensuring human rights in the contraceptive guidelines.
The WHO has been developing the guidelines for the past year. Dr. Temmerman says a number of women's needs should receive special attention.
We want to make sure that the human rights principles, such as acceptability, accessibility, affordability, choice, informed consent, are high in the guidelines.
The guidelines suggest providing sexual and reproductive health services to women and girls. They include family planning information and methods to prevent pregnancy. Dr. Temmerman notes that reducing deaths of mothers involving childbirth is fifth on the list of the Millennium Development Goals. And she says politicians have been giving more attention to birth control in their policy planning in recent years.
And that, of course, is linked to better care, better antenatal care, better delivery care, but also to the right of a woman to decide when she will get pregnant, how many children she wants.
The doctor says millions of women must seek permission from their husbands to get help with birth control. At the same time, teenage girls need permission from their parents or guardians. Many young boys also need to have modern contraception help. Dr. Temmerman says many women are forced into their decisions about whether to become pregnant or not. Family members, the community, and cultural and religious barriers may make these decisions for them. And she says, some governments order women to have tubal ligation surgeries. These operations make a woman unable to bear children. She also says teenage girls who become pregnant may face severe threats. The WHO estimates that 16 million girls between ages 15 and 19 give birth each year. This happens mostly in countries where the majority of people do not earn much money. Many pregnant adolescent girls face dangerous conditions and death. Dr. Temmerman called this a huge health burden. I'm Bob Doty.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. World News follows at the beginning of the hour on VOA. The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. Some farmers in the central Philippines are preparing for their first rice harvest since a powerful typhoon hit the country. Typhoon Haiyan caused major damage over a wide area and destroyed homes. The storm killed more than 6,000 people. Florencio de la Cruz remembers Typhoon Haiyan. He says he had harvested 6 tons of rice less than 2 weeks before the storm hit. Strong winds blew off the top of the storehouse where he kept his rice. Heavy rain nearly destroyed his harvest. However, the sun helped dry some of the crop, and he was able to recover a little. Late last year, Florencio de la Cruz received rice seeds from the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. The FAO helped start the planting season in the central Philippines. More than 2/3 of the local population lives in poverty. Mr. De La Cruz says nothing would have happened without the seed program. He expects to harvest the new crop on March 28th. Last year, officials said 63,000 hectares of rice had to be replanted after Haiyan struck. In 2012, another storm reduced the government's supply of seed. Philippine officials say the FAO donated 52% of the required seeds. The international community donated another 28%. The rest came from the Philippine government. Graziano da Silva is the director of the FAO. Earlier this month, he inspected the seed program in the area where Florencio de la Cruz lives. Mr. da Silva says the farmers are receiving what he calls certified quality seeds. He says these seeds should produce more crops than the seeds farmers have now. But he says the first group of seeds was provided under less than perfect conditions.
Remember that the typhoon came exactly in the moment that was close in the time, let's say, for another planting. And we need to do it in a week, 2 weeks. And we did it. The most important that the result would be zero if we not provide those.
Mr. da Silva says the reaction of the international community and agencies in the Philippines was one of the quickest he has seen. He says the next step is to make sure the farmers get a fair price for their rice crops. He believes that this might influence them to plant even more. Agencies say Typhoon Haiyan destroyed 33 million coconut trees. Philippine officials have announced plans for a large coconut clearing operation in the area where the typhoon hit. The goal is to plant new coconut trees. The trees will need at least 4 years before they can produce fruit. For now, the agencies plan to help coconut farmers plant fast-growing crops like cassava and white corn. And that's the Agriculture Report. I'm Jonathan Evans.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Faith Lapidus. Today, we tell about compulsive hoarding syndrome, also known as hoarding disorder. It is both a mental disorder and a public safety issue.
Many people in the United States are looking forward to the return of spring. At this time of year, millions of Americans do what is known as spring cleaning. Many open windows in their homes to let in fresh air. Others use cleaning products that make their homes smell nice. And some organize their belongings. Many Americans have a strong desire to clean up their homes. This can also be called removing clutter. Clutter can be described as a disorganized collection of things. To remove clutter means to throw away the things you do not want. Then, you organize the things you have decided to keep.
In recent years, it has become easy to find information on how to attack clutter. There are books, websites, and even television programs on the subject. Specialty stores sell containers and boxes for storing things around the house. Some Americans pay people to come to their homes and remove clutter. These professional organizers offer advice on what to keep and what to throw away. They also help with organizing things. However, the services of a professional organizer can be costly. They can cost up to $200 an hour.
Some people have serious problems with clutter. They have what experts call hoarding disorder. Hoarders continually gather objects until there is no space or room for everything. American experts estimate that hoarding disorder affects between 2 and 5% of the population. Hoarding had been linked to obsessive-compulsive disorder, also known as OCD. People who suffer from OCD have ideas that interfere with their daily activities. But they recognize they have a problem. Some hoarders do not realize they have a mental health disorder. Hoarding can also result from other disorders.
In 2013, the American Psychological Association included hoarding in its Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Mental health experts often turn to the manual for guidance. People with hoarding disorder continue to gather and save things. Most people say the objects hoarders keep are useless or worthless. However, hoarders believe the objects could be useful someday. They may even develop an emotional connection to such things, or feel safer when surrounded by their growing possessions. Hoarders are afraid to throw away things. At the same time, they continue to bring more and more things into their homes. They may save objects such as newspapers, clothing, and even old food.
Hoarders live with so much clutter that it may affect their physical health. Dirt, insects, and bacteria that form over time can cause sickness. Safety experts say the homes of hoarders often are unsafe. A room filled with newspapers, for example, can cause floor supports to break down. In many cases, a room is filled from top to bottom with useless things. There is only a small space to walk from one end of the room to the other. As a result, a fire could spread quickly if it were to start in the home of a hoarder. Household clutter could delay efforts by firefighters to rescue people living in the home. Recently, a woman suffered major burns from a house fire in the American state of Maryland. Her household clutter made it difficult for firefighters to rescue her. Hoarding can become not only a safety problem for the person with the disorder, but also for those who may be attempting to help the individual.
One of the most famous hoarding cases involved two brothers in New York City. Homer and Langley Collier were found dead in their home in 1947. Langley Collier was buried under what appeared to be a mountain of old newspapers. The weight of the newspapers crushed him. Langley was Homer's caretaker. Medical examiners believed Langley had been dead for several days before his brother Homer died of starvation. Police found the home filled with thousands of unread books, pieces of wood, and skins from large fruits and vegetables. The brothers also saved pipes and large automobile parts.
Hoarding disorder can have a severe effect on a family. Family members who share a home with a hoarder cannot understand why their loved one keeps so many useless and sometimes dangerous things. It prevents the family from enjoying their home. Experts say the hoarder should make a greater effort to keep the home clean and organized. However, it is not that simple. Randy Frost has studied hoarding. Professor Frost is a psychologist at Smith College in Massachusetts. He says hoarding is more than a mental disorder. He says it is also an issue of public health.
Severe health risks can result from saving waste, food, or materials that can cause fires. In the United States, hoarding can violate laws that were created to protect public safety and property. Some cities have formed groups to deal with the problems caused by hoarding. Each group usually has representatives from one or more government agencies. Agency officials say they often hear about hoarders from people who live near someone affected with the disorder. Those people no longer want to see broken household equipment or other things lying on property near their homes.
Individuals suffering from hoarding disorder do not only collect objects. Some keep a large number of cats, dogs, birds, snakes, or other animals. Most animal hoarders believe they are rescuing the animals to care for them. But unlike most pet owners, hoarders do not realize when they have too many animals. They are really doing more harm than good. They may not be able to provide health care for the animals. Some animals may not be washed or fed. Officials have been shocked at the condition of the homes of animal hoarders. Floors were covered with animal wastes. Infectious diseases were a problem. Some animals were found starving, while others had died.
Earlier this year, police in California arrested a schoolteacher for hoarding 400 snakes. The man's neighbors reported that his home had a very bad smell coming from it. When police arrived, they found the home filled with snakes in small plastic containers. Some of the snakes were dead, but others were alive. other containers also had rats and mice. A few years ago, a grand jury in New York charged a man and his wife with hoarding hundreds of cats. The cats clearly had not received good care. Investigators said some of the animals were missing teeth or eyes. Others were suffering from many insect bites and dehydration, a lack of needed fluids in the body. The owners were charged with torturing and injuring animals.
Americans have shown deep interest in the strange behavior of animal hoarders, like the people in New York. Several television stations show reality programs about hoarders. Reality programs present events as they happen, such as the rescue of animals from hoarders' homes. Television cameras capture the sadness of the owners as animal police take away their pets. And the cameras show the struggles of the hoarders and the efforts of people who want to help them.
Gregory Chasson is a mental health expert. He teaches at Towson University in Maryland. He says the public's interest in hoarding programs comes from most people's desire to save things. He says that for most people, this simply means behavior like keeping too many papers or having a little clutter. But he says hoarding becomes a mental health problem when it interferes with normal life.
Mr. Chasson says hoarding is extremely difficult to treat. He says hoarders are less likely than others to recognize that they have a problem. But he suggests that cognitive behavioral therapy can help. In this method, hoarders work with an expert to understand why they gather and save so many things. When reasons are found for the hoarding, he says, people can develop a plan for organization. They can learn how to decide what to throw away. They can learn to resist the urge to bring home more things.
Some hoarders improve by meeting with others and talking about their struggles. These group therapy meetings can take place in the hoarders' homes. But the therapy does not always happen in direct meetings. Some meetings for hoarders are held online through the internet, and some hoarders use their computers to communicate with a supportive person. A method as easy as taking a picture of the area to be organized before and after the work is done can give hoarders a feeling of progress. With improved decision-making skills and ways of thinking, it is possible for a hoarder to become a former hoarder.
This Science in the News was written by Kim Varzi. Our producer was Katie Weaver. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Faith Lapidus. Join us again next week at this time for more news about science on The Voice of America.